You know, we don't do follow-up very much. We don't topics. We should probably be better about that.
Follow-up topics?
Yeah, like stuff we got right, stuff we got wrong, feedback that came in.
I just assume I'm wrong on everything, and then that makes it easier.
Yeah. We do follow-up on things that you don't get wrong, which is why we don't ever do follow-up. That's fine.
Oh, I see.
I just figured, you know, since we've got a lot of chatter in the Slack team, that some of it could be used as follow-up. I did have some good ideas. Like, let's see, I think it was Craig who suggested that we cover this idea of a Salesforce developer. Right?
Yep.
And he says, as someone who would like to start to learn to code, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, people are like, well, you know, there's the whole citizen developer and all this other stuff. And what does that mean? I thought it'd be interesting to talk about, you know, what does that mean in the context of Salesforce? What does it mean in a broader context? But we'll have to, that should be a planned topic for a subsequent episode.
But it
sounds like a fun topic.
Though, yeah, it does.
But anyway, that's not really follow-up. That's future stuff. But anyway.
I'm starting to think that word does not mean what you think it means.
It probably doesn't. John, I got a John question to start off with.
Okay.
Do you know about this thing called AMP? And by the way, this is one of those things that when I hear about it, I'm like, I feel like I should have known about this already because I do a lot of development using web technologies. And I kind of pride myself on reasonably staying fairly well up to date on whether it's, you know, the latest JavaScript or its variants and tooling and crazy CSS stuff and SVG and, right, you know, all these different techniques and tools, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I discovered this thing called accelerated mobile pages. And as soon as I heard this person talking about it, I immediately knew what they were. But you can go to ampproject.org. And let's see, so what are they? Of course, they don't have a good description on there. Let's see, let me go to their FAQ. Okay, so their expectation is that content should load fast and be easy to explore. What is this? So accelerated mobile pages are just like any other HTML page, but with a limited set of technical functionality that is defined and governed by the open source AMP spec. Just like all web pages, AMP will load in any modern browser or app web view. But basically, it's like you define, like say you've got a blog post, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then your blog template is defined, you know, whatever. You can have, I guess, a separate version, an AMP version, that's basically the content is simplified, the allowed technologies you can use in are simplified, but the publishers, aggregators, search engines, whether it's Facebook, Google, or whatever. You've seen these things now where like you'll search, say, Google,
mm-hmm.
and you'll get these sliding cards is like one of the second or third spots. I think those are AMPs.
Hmm.
And so if you want to be eligible to go in there, and I think Facebook's doing this too. I'm sure they're all doing it now. I think those are AMP pages.
Interesting.
It's similar to, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I asked you, oh yeah, how do we, if you take one of our pages from our gooddaysirpodcast.com and post it into Facebook or whatever, it doesn't have like a nice, doesn't show up real nice. But then I discovered there's all these meta tags that Facebook, I think Facebook defined them, but other companies kind of are using the same ones or whatever, but it's almost like a AMP type of page, but it's not AMP. It's a kind of a proprietary spec using meta tags. You can define like an image that basically is what Facebook will show there, which is kind of, so it's kind of crusty. It's almost like a screenshot almost of it, but it can look really nice. I mean, that's one way to get when someone posts a link of some page on your site, you can have it look however you want it to look as the author of that site. So AMP is similar, but it's more of an open standard and uses, you know, web technologies, just again, a subset of them.
So you're saying I need to better about our social posting?
No. I found this, thought it was interesting. It's one of those things that I thought, I probably should have known about this before. Although it is really new, and it's like, you know,
I hadn't heard of it. So
the adoption, but it seemed like a John thing because you know you're Mr. Web. even though you were you are the Larry Ellison. I just realized this. You are the Larry Ellison of the web.
How so?
Oh my gosh. The you used to hate the web. Anything web enabled, you hated the web. You were so anti-web.
I'm still anti-web when it comes to rich desktop applications. I still think the operating system and applications built natively for that operating system are the way to go. But I'm also, not to be biased.
This is coming from the guy who's currently developing a...
Yes, because I also don't want to be so stuck in my dogma that I don't get out of it to see what these other technologies offer, where the gaps are, where it fails, where its strong suits are. And so why not build something?
You're just learning more about the enemy, right?
I am. I am.
Gotta learn about the enemy. Anyway.
And it's not unprecedented. There's companies that have started out with using web technologies that once they built a certain customer base, they decided we're going full native because we need to provide more advanced features. They need to be faster or whatever their reasoning have switched from these hybrid web-based technologies that will run on your phone or your desktop to building native clients.
This is also this AMP thing also reminds me of, and if you've ever implemented your own chatter client, Matt Morse, you probably know about this, which is, you know how, let's say you post a YouTube video into a chatter feed, and then when it displays it in that feed, it's got, brings in the title, and it's got a thumbnail, right, that's right. The word, and it's got a play button on it, and you can hit play, then the video, actually shows the video, comes in everything. Well, that is not, the chatter API or whatever is not going to give that. If you are implementing your own chatter client, mm-hmm. you don't get all that stuff.
No, of course not.
You just get the URL to the YouTube link. That's all that's actually in the data, in the feed.
But as you learned, isn't that desirable?
Isn't that desirable?
And I'm going back to your earlier issue with your Visual Force charting that you had to do a bunch of crap to override.
Yeah, that Visual Force.
They provided you a nice component.
I know.
And you got to use it, but then you found, oh, crap.
So you're talking about I needed to get a chart from a Salesforce report into a Visual Force page. And turns out that's really easy because there's this thing called analytics:chart, which mm-hmm. is exactly what you think it is. The problem with that is you just characterize it as a nice chart component. And in reality, it leaves a lot to be desired.
I meant that you got the chart by just putting a tag in.
Right.
It did it for you.
And there are some options on that component, but there's not enough. Like, for example, the problem I had was when you... It creates a clickable chart, mm-hmm. and I don't want it to be clickable. I don't want them to go to the report. This is in a very sanitized and carefully crafted community. I don't want them going directly to Salesforce URLs that I don't want them. By the way, there's no way to block them from going to all these URLs, which is one of the fun aspects of communities. Mm. If they get a URL, if they know the URL structure, they can go to it, and there's nothing you can do.
Yep.
Congratulations. Now your users are on completely non-responsive, ugly Salesforce pages that you can't control. But yeah, I wanted it to not be clickable for that reason. And so I had to do this, terribly nasty stuff. I had to hack into Salesforce's CSS and override the pointer style and use the capturing phase of the click to wrap it in a component that would intercept that click and then cancel, so it didn't get off, so it didn't capture down to the thing, and it was a mess. But I did it, and I'm sure it's one of those things that, like, when Summer 16 comes out or whatever the next one is, it could break, right? Because I'm just doing all kinds of stuff you're not supposed to do,
right? I still think you should have just floated a div over it and be done with it.
I probably should have. I immediately thought, I'm gonna have to worry about positioning a div and knowing what size the chart's gonna be, and That seemed to be fraught with its own issues as well, but it could have eventually been a better solution. What would have been better about the solution? It would have been more. You're not breaking the firewall there. You're not.
Right.
You're still treating the component like a black box.
Right.
And yeah, so it probably is a better solution. There you go, John, trying to show me up. This is what you do. I would have done it better.
I probably would have taken just as long to position that and deal with all the resizing events and all that kind of stuff, this headaches that are going to come with that.
Yeah.
Because it can't be within the container, because otherwise the container will propagate the message. So it has to be outside of the container, floated above it, so that the interaction is they can't click on it.
Yeah. Man, I got to say, we might as well talk about our beverage, because I want to say just how delicious Four Roses is. Oh my gosh.
It's so one good. Of my favorites. It is my favorite. Not one of. It is my favorite. I found it a long time ago. Actually, what I found was one of their rarest batches. Extremely rare.
Single barrel?
Single barrel. It's a single barrel, but they only produce...
single barrel.
This is.
Is that really single barrel, though?
Yeah.
So how do they prevent... you know, variation in flavor from one barrel to the next. I mean, they bottle obviously more than one barrel of this whiskey. They don't just bottle one barrel of it.
Right.
And from barrel to barrel, the whiskey tastes different. That's why most houses blend. And that's why you very rarely get a single barrel, because they want to do a big blend. So the whole batch, right, for the year or whatever, has the house style or mm-hmm. whatever it has the flavor they're going for.
So they have other whiskeys that aren't single barrel, and I'm assuming they blend whatever's left over.
Right, but I'm saying that's not single one barrel. Like they used many barrels to make a single barrel. Now, inside any given bottle is only the whiskey from one barrel, but that one barrel may be quite different tasting than the yeah. barrel that my bottle came from.
Well, that's the whole point of single barrel whiskey. Is
they should put like a barrel number or something on it, so you at least know if you get a different barrel.
It's right there.
There is a barrel number.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Yeah, okay. But this also, here you go.
I didn't mean to bump the mic. I just wanted to make sure everyone knew we had a real bottle here. Isn't virtual.
Not the soundboard.
Yeah.
not a soundboard. The idea that the single barrel or small batch or single cask, all these terms, I'm not convinced they actually mean it. And the idea that I'm not a Scotch person. I've tried, but it's intimidating. It scares me, and I don't know that much about it. So, email John. The idea that single malt Scotch is better than a blended Scotch, I'm not sure I buy into that at all. Like,
I don't think it's better. You do get a much consistent flavor when it's blended, because that's the point.
John at gooddaysirpodcast.com.
Actually, that is a real email address.
Is it? Okay. Good.
You're the only one that opted not to get a Good Day Sir podcast email.
I'm the one?
Yeah.
Out of two?
Out of two. And you know what? I paid for that too, because I had to pay for email forwarding. So I have an empty.
We might
slot.
As well create as many. Does anyone else want an account? We should have a sign up form. I mean, we're already paying for it, right? We might as well spread that cost amongst as many people as we can.
Is that what the world needs? More email addresses?
Yeah, exactly.
No one ever said, you know what? I need another email address.
We still need more email. All right, back to business. Salesforce released some information last week on some of their more recent acquisitions. I guess they were all...
$75 billion or $1 million.
It was only $75 million. Yeah, so they weren't giantly huge or anything. But one of them was... So who was it? I'm trying to think who was in there. I know MetaMind was in there, because I wrote down. They spent let me back up, because this gets into a little bit of accounting fun stuff. There's something you'll see on a company's balance sheet called goodwill. And that means, this is probably, I probably should look up a definition, but it's basically usually used for when a company buys another company. Let's say that company, its book value, like what its assets minus its whatever, what it's worth in the end, is say $100 million, right? Mm-hmm. But you usually have to pay a premium for companies. They want to sell for more than just what their book value is. So, you know, maybe you pay $150 million for the company to get them. So now you have $100 million in assets on your books, but that other $50 million difference has to go somewhere. What goes to book? It goes to goodwill. And by the way, Salesforce has, I think I remember looking at their Q1 2017, like $4 or $5 billion in goodwill. So that's the amount that they, quote, overpaid for their acquisitions they made.
We need to get some of that.
Well, here's the problem. Eventually that goodwill has to be written down. And when it does, that becomes an expense, which hits your profitability. So obviously they're incentivized to, at least especially for now, while they're struggling to be profitable, they're just going to leave that goodwill where it is.
Right.
They're not going to depreciate it. Should they? Will they have to? Yeah. That's another one of these clouds hanging over their finances. Go cloud. Okay, so they paid $32.8 million for MetaMind, one of the many. Salesforce is going to be a machine learning AI powerhouse. I mean, they really are.
That's what they're leaning towards.
I mean, yeah. They're going to have, it's going to be all bots. Hey, maybe then we can get good support.
Oh, so a bot for support?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it can't be any, I mean, it's got to be better than what we've got now. Yeah.
I'd rather a bot read a knowledge-based article than a person.
Yeah, 32.8 million for MetaMind, but they took a $31.2 million goodwill charge for it. Okay, they paid 32.8. The goodwill charge was 31.2. So so they basically paid a 95% basically upcharge over their actual assets.
But I mean, that's the companies of today. There's this market cap valuation that extremely outweighs their actual value.
And it's I agree, and especially in this case. I mean, overall, that's kind of a small price. They were a small company. It's probably an acqui-hire. They're just getting the people anyway. But the fact that they paid $32.8 million for a $1.5 million company is interesting. Another interesting fact about that is Mr. Mark C. Benioff, whatever his full name is, was personally an early investor in MetaMind.
A little goodwill coming back.
Yeah, exactly. It's makes goodwill a double entendre, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Who else was in that? Implicit. Are you familiar with Implicit?
No.
It's Implicit. I do not recommend this product.
Why?
I don't know if they're just a Salesforce integration. I think they were not just Salesforce, but it's basically, it reads your email like proactively. I think it sits on Gmail servers or something. I don't know. And it automatically like creates contacts in Salesforce for you, automatically links up your emails to Salesforce things. And I know people who use this and really like it, but most of the people I know who are forced to use this do not like it. I don't like it. It's funny. I get an email like every week from Implicit telling me how much time they've saved me. And they're literally, I mean, I'm sure they're rolling this up and they take credit for how much time they've saved people. I can promise you Implicit has not saved me a single minute. So
what don't you like about it?
It's annoying. It's creepy. I'm not a big Salesforce user. I mean, it's not like I don't spend my day in Salesforce. Okay. To say the least, except for building in it. I don't, but as a user, I don't spend my day in Salesforce.
Right.
Even the people I know who do spend their day in Salesforce do not like this thing. They say it doesn't help. It's wrong too much of the time. It's too creepy. So, where's my...
Super creepy.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was one of them. Did you read anything about any of the other ones or anything interesting?
Just an article that highlighted Your SL, which is some German company, I think, and I couldn't even read the release on it because it was in a different language. I tried to Google translate it, but it really didn't make sense. Another one, Prediction.io. So, I mean, that's another one in the game of, intelligence and analytics and
Minhash, Tempo AI, Prediction.io, MetaMind.
So they're on this binge. They're continuing to acquire and build up new technology.
What's interesting about the AI stuff, though, is one of Salesforce's big pushes is obviously just to go broad because they've got to keep this revenue growth going.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've got to, and they're not going to get there with CRM, with Sales Cloud, and so they've been frantically adding these additional services, whether it's marketing was kind of one of the original, I guess, purchases that they acquisitions that they added on. But, now Wave was something that I think was organically built for the most part. IoT, field service Lightning was something they also built internally, mainly, I think. But then what was the other acquisition? Steel Brick, mm-hmm. Right? So they're going broad trying to – some of those things are immediate revenue type things.
Right.
And they really need those. I'm contrasting here the AI stuff, which I think is not immediate revenue. It's things that, and they may productize some of that, I think, actually have something that you can, is there any AI stuff yet that you have to, the inbox one, what was that called?
RelateIQ.
Yeah, so that's an extra charge. I mean, you actually have to pay to get that, right?
Yeah.
That's not just like, oh, well, it's.
You know,
I mean, I don't know if that changed. John. You don't really get anything free.
I thought, I guess you don't. I don't know. I thought it might have been included in Sales Cloud as of the last Dreamforce, but I might be wrong.
I think it's available. I don't think it's included, but I'm sure someone can fact check us. But you know, theoretically, a lot of these things are going to go to just making Salesforce itself smarter about things, not necessarily something that you're going to, you know, a new line item you can pay for.
Right.
Anyway. this is some news converging here. Thought it would be interesting to talk about. The Dreamforce, I saw this on one of these chatter digest emails you get. I think I'm on a Dreamforce one, maybe from last year. And, or maybe this was one of the partner ones, I don't know. But it was, they were talking about how, it was someone from Salesforce saying, hey, the deadline to get your app approved, the AppExchange app approved in time for Dreamforce, the deadline to submit it is July 24th.
Wow.
When is Dreamforce this year?
October, I think.
July, October, September. So three months, basically. Have you seen the news on the notoriously slow approver of apps, Apple? what their times are now?
I don't know what their times are now, but I know it's been a nuisance.
Yeah. So they're now basically just one day. It's one day. Yeah, that was making the news last week because they didn't really make an announcement about it. They just...
It's probably because they were able to take what a person was doing and turn that into a system doing that.
Right. Well, maybe that's one reason why Salesforce is buying all these AI things. They're going to have your app reviewed by bots instead of by people.
You think it would be easier, for someone like Salesforce who has taken control of everything we can do, the execution of our code, to analyze that.
Man, I'm not really... I've done ISV projects before. I've helped ISVs build things, but I'm not an ISV. I still hear lots of complaints about that. Just the whole program, but the security review.
Yeah, because especially the security review, they're not always done by someone who understands the technology or what you're trying to do with it.
Well, they throw the book at you.
Yeah,
they take, you know, the OWASP type. Is that how you say them? OWASP top 10 vulnerability threats.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, if you want to be a developer, if you think you're a developer, that's one of those things. Like, every developer should just know those top 10 threads. Cross-site scripting, SQL injection, right? You should know those from memory, although I can only name two of them right now.
You, sir, are not a developer.
Exactly. I'm not a developer. I'm a citizen developer. That's all I can qualify for. But yeah, it's 3 month review time. I mean, that's crazy. How do you do business like that?
Have you ever had, because I've only been on a few. I think I've maybe been part of maybe 5 ISV products where I helped develop.
Well, a long time ago, I remember you and I worked on one together.
Yeah. But it also seemed like when you put it up for review, they're also trying to help you position it and sell it within the Salesforce ecosystem. They're more sales. I mean, they run the tools and make sure that the checkboxes are checked and the T's or the I's are dotted and all those kind of things. But there's a hefty amount of positioning in there as well, it seems.
Oh, I mean, you know, you have to write a blurb. You have to pick what categories you think you'd be good in. What else? You have to have a publisher profile. But I think you're overselling their willingness and their desire to promote you. I'm not sure they promote you.
No, I'm not talking about promotion. I'm talking about they seem more focused on how you're going to sell it and how you're going to position it than they are just approving the application in one instance that I had.
Maybe so. And obviously, I mean, I think this is one of those things that, and you know, I mean, I know there are people that run this program that work very hard and, you know, again, limited resources, blah, blah, blah. All those asterisks, you know.
Safe harbor.
Yeah, exactly. but it's...
By the way, yeah. If you want a good drinking game at Dreamforce, safe harbor.
I don't know. Might end up in the emergency room.
You might. You might have to get something pumped. I don't know why I said something.
It is San Francisco. okay. Anyway. So, yeah, get your apps ready. You have... for the Dreamforce in October, you have less than one month to get your app submitted.
Hmm.
Wow.
Is there a Trailhead badge for ISVs to get certified?
There probably is.
App Exchange products?
I would imagine so.
Hmm.
Who is it that's got all the badges?
Adam.
It's Adam, yeah. He's got ones that you, all these like one time only, limited time only ones.
He's got three.
Did I tell you I did Trailhead a few weeks ago? I tried it again and it actually worked. Because remember the first time I tried it, I would get to the end and it would take the little quiz or whatever, and it was kept failing. It kept timing out. There were just like error messages.
Hmm.
So the other day I got in there because I was trying. I just wanted to do some lightning stuff. So it's like, oh, I'll take some of these lightning things, and sure enough, it worked. So I actually have a few badges.
I don't. Because I think you can do the Trailhead without being logged in, but if you want to confirm and actually get the badge, you have to log in. And I just kind of walked through them.
Go get your badges.
I got some badges.
Badges? We don't need no stink. You need to have that clip on there.
Do I not? Let me see if I have that. Let me do a quick search. You know what movie that's from?
Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
Well, it's from an earlier quote, but Blazing Saddles made it popular. It's one of my favorite movies, by the way. I'm a big Gene Wilder fan, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
Badges. We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
That's me. I'm the belligerent.
But that I think that was from the original quote. The Blazing Saddles one was, we don't need no stinking badges.
Yeah, that was, what was that from? That's a really old movie.
Yeah. So I think that was the original quote of that, and then.
There's a follow-up item for you, John.
What?
We can have some follow-up next week. You can figure out what movie that was from.
Oh, the original?
Yeah. Oh, okay. What else is going on, Mr. John?
Oh, I can talk now? I can talk about topics?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll just keep going. You know, this is a conversation. Don't make it awkward.
So how are our UK counterparts doing out there with the rumored, not, I don't think it's rumored actually, the 40% price hike on Salesforce?
I did not hear about that.
Because it's lightning now, and you've got more features.
Well, they price hiked it here too, not that much.
Well, they did. However, I think here's the issue is that, you know, the European market was kind of a new market they were getting into, so I think they kind of priced it much lower because of that.
Oh, and they're just catching up now.
And I think they're starting to catch it up because they got to make that $10 billion. And so
yeah, we've been proportionally paying for the license of our UK people. So we're going to end this socialism right now.
Yeah, so proportionally, the price hike, if you go by percentages, it's 20% price hike in the US, but in the UK, it's a 40% price hike. And again, I think it's just to kind of catch it up to where we're at here. But still, I mean, if you look at it percentage-wise, and if you're one of those that has to renew your licenses, you're like,
yeah,
holy crap.
Yeah.
I mean, you're almost paying double.
And, of course, you know what I'm going to say about this?
What?
This is the type of thing to think about when you decide to lock all of your business up into a proprietary system that's run by one company, and where you cannot take your investment and move somewhere else if you need to. If they decide to raise your prices by 50%, or if they get in trouble by your government. Let's say you're in Germany. Germany's really pretty tough on things. What if Salesforce got in trouble or whatever, and they, you know, had to shut something down or change something, or who knows? I mean, there's just
any number,
or if they go down for a day and you lose a day worth of data and you're like, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. What's your option now?
Again, what's your option in general? What if you decide 40% is too much and you want to switch?
Well, there's a lot of it. I mean, the competition's fierce, man. There's a lot of competition.
Well, I know that. I'm just saying it's still there, regardless of what issues you may have or the price hike. You can always go somewhere else.
Not if you've invested.
But I mean,
not if you've already blown. What's the safe way to say this? Spent your. Not if you've already spent your money on investing in Salesforce.
I guess what I'm going to say is if your justification for Salesforce was razor thin and it was purely based on cost, you've got a bigger issue, I think, because of the price is going to go up. The cost of that subscription service is going to change one way or another.
Sure. But everyone assumes it's going to be, you know, small incremental changes.
Shouldn't. If you're good at what you do, you don't sit there and make assumptions on a subscription-based application that it's always going to be the same. Even in your own personal life,
I didn't say it was always going to be the same. Changes. I'm just saying that sometimes people, you know, might anticipate, you know, a 5 to 10% increase when they renew or whatever, and all of a sudden now it's 40%.
Well, then you put that in your contract. Salesforce will never increase my year-over-year percentage of cost of user licenses greater than 10%.
I think there are very few companies who have that type of bargaining power with Salesforce. Anyway, something to think about.
Hopefully within that year's time, you've seen the value and you're able to kind of either yay or nay it with some degree of confidence to say, yes, this is the right thing for us. It's going to cost us a little more, but it's done this, this, and this for us. And it's easy to justify the price increase. If it's not easy, then maybe you do need to look at something else. Maybe you don't need to continue with Salesforce given the price hike.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good call to action in terms of decision making.
Yeah. Anyway, we've covered that before.
Fine.
Hey, I tried your Amazon Smile thing.
Oh, you did?
This is some follow-up. I was going to place an order, and I got preemptively prompted with the Smile thing. But it kind of creeped me out a little bit. I was like, okay, cool. I picked a charity.
Mm-hmm.
And then it said, we need you to now shop with this separate URL if you actually wanted to go to charity. And I thought, okay, that's weird. And then they said, why is there a separate URL? Well, the Amazon Smile program offers customers a new benefit. This is their explanation for why there's a separate URL. The Amazon Smile program offers customers a new benefit, making a donation to your favorite charity. We're able to provide this benefit to you when you choose to start your shopping at smile.amazon.com, in part because we expect Amazon Smile to grow primarily through word of mouth instead of paid advertising, and this enables us to fund donations to our customers' favorite organizations. That was one of the longest non-answer answers I've ever heard. They actually did not say at all why you have to go to a separate URL for this.
I think it's a very much a pilot program, and if for some reason it doesn't last.
Come on, it's Amazon. They know who I am. I shouldn't have to go to a separate URL for them to.
Well, I think there's two things.
I'm saying, sure, donate 5%, you know, 2% or 1/10% or whatever it is to charity of my purchase. But why not, right? It doesn't cost me anything. I don't have to go to a separate domain for that.
Well, I think it's two things. One, because you're going to an actual domain, you're actively agreeing to, yes, this purchase I'm making is creating a donation to this company or to this entity.
But if it's not costing me anything, I'm actually not paying anything to a charity. Why are they even asking me this? That's what I understand about the Smile program. Why are they even asking my permission? Because it's not coming out of my pocket at all. Why doesn't Amazon just get on 111? Well, they don't have to ask me for that.
Well, because it makes you a participant in the charity process. You get to choose.
Not any more than what would be before. I mean,
sure, because when you click buy, you know that you're a portion of that's going to this organization.
But Amazon could do that without me having to. I'm not giving them permission to anything.
It's a psychology thing.
I know. That's what I'm saying. This is weird. There's something weird about that.
It's very much a psychology thing. I mean, yeah, they could in the background just say everything we do donates 1%. But now they're including you in the process and saying, okay, you choose. And now every time you make a donation intentionally, every time you actively in your head go, I'm going to Amazon Smile because everything I buy is going to this charity and I actively want to participate in that.
I just thought of a reason that they may do this.
Okay.
You know, Amazon's big with these people who have referral accounts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you had a, you know, Marco.org and you read one of Marco's clickbait posts and click one of his Amazon links, he's signed up for that with Amazon. So he gets a little bit of that money. I bet you there's something in their contract for those or whatever that on special programs, like if you go to smile.amazon.com, they're taking that referral money instead of paying a referral person, whoever's link you clicked on last, it goes to the charity instead.
So you're saying they piggyback off the existing technology.
Their margins are razor thin. They can't afford to pay a referral person and to also donate to charity. It's their way to get out of the referral thing for people who went to smile.amazon.com.
Mm.
It's a separate website.
Technically. Maybe. Or it could be because don't you have to link into Amazon a certain way for that referral to give you credit?
You do, but once you're there, your time on the site is linked to that session still.
So what if this is just piggybacking off that, meaning they didn't actually write any new technology to support this? The Smile program is technically its own.
But you stay on
referral.
That Smile URL the whole time. Like, and that it's a separate website. I mean,
I'm just speculating.
I don't know.
The other thing is what if it doesn't last? It's an easier way to cut off and say, hey, I know you came here intending to, you know, do your charitable shopping, but, you know, this program's been discontinued. Go back to Amazon.com.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. There's some reason they did it. Here's what I'm saying. There is a reason they send you to a separate subdomain, and it's not the reason they told you.
Probably.
Anyway.
But I'm glad. Do you want to share which charity or...
I did SPCA.
Cool. That still doesn't clear your swear jar, by the way.
They listed like four or five, which I was surprised at the small number, but you could also search.
No, you can search for more.
Yeah. And yeah. I actually picked SPCA, but then when I got to the screen where they gave me this thing and I said, oh, you need to go to this URL and gave me this BS answer why, it immediately was like, I didn't finish it. I'm like, I'm not going to finish this until I know what this means.
Right.
So I actually haven't picked anything yet. All my profits going to the man. So I know you were talking about Mr. Bully in Chief, Social Justice Warrior, P.T. Benioff. Do you want to get into that now?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay.
You want to get into the videos?
Oh, is that what the videos are?
Yeah, the videos lead into that. I mean, there's...
So then Kramer first?
So there's two Kramer videos. We'll start with the SJW stuff. That's just top of mind. That's what everyone's talking about.
Is that the first link here?
First link, okay. Yeah.
And let's see. Time code is...
028.
Okay.
And this actually, I mean, to set this up, I mean, this kind of leads into what we were talking about last week when I said he's very distracted. And apparently I'm not the only one asking the question. Are you too distracted by your involvement in politics?
I have seen that. There's lots of articles being... Uh-oh. I have to turn ghostery off to play this. Pause blocking. Okay. Wah, wah. Retry. We'll edit this out because we have very high quality production standards. Actually, maybe I will. It's taking forever. Okay. Come on. Oh, it's an ad, John.
No, seriously? It starts with an ad, unfortunately. This is why you need to clip it beforehand and not just play it live.
I'm dropping a marker because this is... Oh, no ad. All right, 28. And their thumb does not show you where you are. Wow. Get a player, guys.
There are some people, including politicians, sure, who say, what is Mark Benioff doing? Not focused on just making money for the shareholders. What is your takeaway for just those who say that, given some of your outspoken comments?
Well, I think that every CEO has to start to stand up and speak on behalf of their stakeholders. That includes their customers. We certainly do that on this show. Employees, that's an incredibly important stakeholder. Of course, the shareholders, who have been very well taken care of, especially at Salesforce. Our community, our local cities, our citizens.
Really? They're getting those dividend checks?
And those who are underserved. CEOs are responsible for all of their stakeholders. And we have to shift from being just shareholder-based to stakeholder-based, and that's really what I'm an advocate of. And Jim, it gets down to when employees call me and they feel that there's a problem. It could be in their personal lives or their health. It could be in their local community. It
could be that their pod is down.
...is where they're being repressed by politicians. I have an obligation to step in, which is what you've seen with recent activity.
Right. All right.
All right,
now,
so that's the end of that part. So I have a couple of issues with the statements. One, shareholders have not been taken care of. The only one making out are the people who are selling their massive amounts of stock, like Benioff,
yeah,
to enrich themselves.
Right.
Shareholders are having to hold on to what they have in the hopes that at some point their investment will pay off.
I mean, that's investing, I guess, right?
But they have not been well taken care of. I would bet to say that they're kind of nervous.
Yeah, it could be. Although, I mean, if you look at... Okay, the counter argument to that is look at Salesforce's stock price. It is currently at all-time highs.
It is, surprisingly, considering they had such a major issue.
In fact, Salesforce is the only company I can think of that can have a major outage, as a company that's trusted as much as Salesforce, mm-hmm, that can have a major outage, lose data, and then lose hours and hours of tens of thousands of customers' data, and the next day their stock price goes up.
Yep.
But that's what a very high percentage of institutional ownership will do for you.
He's doing his job then.
Yeah.
I mean,
He is, but again,
his next round of selling is going to bank him quite a bit at $80, which I think it's sitting at right now, isn't it?
That's not to say that, though, this is not a shell game. Just because, you know, this may or may not be a bubble. If it is, I mean, it could be that it's a bubble, it just hasn't popped yet.
Yeah. So the other issue I have with this statement is that he makes it sound like people are advocating for him to go out and do this, and I don't believe that at all. I think this is something that's very personal to him that he feels he needs to go out and advocate for. I don't think anyone's actively come up to him saying, oh, Benioff, this sounds really horrible. Is there anything you can do about this?
Let me just jump to, because I read several of these articles. I also read a lot of the comments, because a lot of people that were Salesforce employees, Salesforce customers, or their family members and friends of Salesforce employee customers. So I read a lot of this stuff, but I'm going to counter what you just said, because here's a quote from Benioff. This is, and this might have been from his CNBC. This is about my employees. This is not my personal advocacy. On a personal level, my biggest commitment is to children's health, where I built two children's hospitals in San Francisco and Oakland. Of course, he can't leave that out.
Yeah, I've got to plug that in.
But he says, this is not about me. This is about something that I really don't know that much about, to be honest with you.
I don't understand that at all.
He said, this is about something that I really... He's talking about the LGBT and the bathrooms and everything else. This is about something I really don't know that much about, to be honest with you. So this is not about Benioff, because this is not, he acknowledges he doesn't even know that much about the issue. But anyway, what I was just saying a minute ago about, I've read a lot of these comments. A lot of these people are saying, and these are some of these, many of the examples I was finding were of LGBT people.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, you know, that's fine or whatever, but I really, you know, I like Salesforce and I use it for my job. And in fact, I got my new job because of Salesforce, but I really could care less about what he's saying about LGBT because it's just a non-issue.
Well, I guess the flip side to it is what I was talking about at lunch, or is sure, we're all on Salesforce's side because, and Benioff's side, because he's tied to the hip with Salesforce. Everything he does represents Salesforce.
Right.
Yeah, what he's doing now, most of us probably agree with him. What happens if he does something that no one agrees with?
Well, again, what happens if they need to raise their price by 50%?
Yeah.
What happened, you know,
just saying it's another distraction, it's another area of risk that can be mitigated.
But he's raising questions that shouldn't have to be raised. Like in customers' minds.
But did Kramer make up that question out of the blue? Was he sitting around going, "No, what kind of questions can I ask Benioff?" No, that's a conversation that's happening out there.
Right.
Which means people are wondering, okay, well, yeah, that's great, Benioff. You're doing all this great social stuff, but you have this company to run that needs to be profitable, and you claim victory on your Q1 report, but it was marginal.
No, there's been a lot of, and I keep seeing even more references. I was reading an article earlier, and they referenced back to like the Ron Burgundy of tech thing from Gawker from a couple of years ago. This is starting to swell up, and I think Mark wanted Kramer to ask this question so that Mark had a reason to explain it away. Mark needed to explain this away, and you have to, you know, so Kramer brought it up.
Yeah, maybe.
That's my theory. All right, we have another one?
Yep.
Same video, okay.
This is another good question from Kramer, by the way.
And again, I know there's no...
there's no...
this player is horrible. They should be ashamed of themselves.
The law was not signed. We can proceed with our business in Georgia.
But have you lost any customers to Oracle or to SAP?
My heat doesn't sound good. Kramer.
No, he's these last few recent episodes, he's really losing his voice.
Maybe he just has a cold. But he always sounds like the Gilbert Gottfried
of TV analysts.
He does.
I think he's always been yelling, and I think it's becoming a serious issue, his voice. I think it's more than just a cold or something. I think this might be a chronic issue.
Why do you think that?
Because these videos are spaced out in time, and he still has the same issue. In fact, it gets worse in the next set of videos that we're going to watch.
He could have some laryngitis or something.
Maybe.
Because of your stand. Because I have not seen them come out like you have.
No, I mean, Jim, the reality actually is a lot of companies are working with us and on our side. You've seen everyone from Bank of America, which are the recent issues in North Carolina, Brian Moynihan aggressively going in and speaking with the governor. You saw it in Indiana, where you saw Eli Lilly, a major employer in the state, go in and evangelize on behalf of their employees. And you even saw it
evangelize.
In Georgia.
I mean, that is a good word for this. It's almost like a religious thing.
Georgia, where you saw great companies like Home Depot get in there with their CFO and make videos to evangelize their cause. And in each and every case, these are Salesforce customers who are really joining customers in evangelizing on behalf of their employees and customers. Look, we're on the right side of history here. See, and we're just trying to do
what... He said customer so many times, I don't even know what he was talking about.
Well, what made me... And again, I know I'm taking this and picking this apart, and it's not my intent to distract from any kind of good that came from those laws not being implemented or whichever. The only thing I'm kind of focusing on is the fact that Benioff seems really distracted by the politics. He makes mention that all of these guys are Salesforce customers, so I wonder if he actually actively went out and contacted the CEOs and said, hey, this is...
Oh, of course he does.
Let's band together and let's do this.
Of course he does. He's even done the thing where he's shamed the ones that... That don't think it's their position to do that. They're, you know, they have a company to run. We're 4 minutes into the 6 minute video that went on, you know, worldwide TV, business news TV, and they haven't talked about their business yet.
actually we're nearing the end of it, and there's no talk of business.
Okay, so your answer is this a distraction?
The problem is you think you're going to get true business knowledge from a Kramer show. His show is entertainment. Let's be clear about that. It's an entertainment show.
Of course it is.
Just like ours is. No one takes it seriously. We're entertainment.
Right. All right. Do you want to do the quarterly numbers one?
Yeah, let's go for that.
I had more, but before we switch to that, is that on a different topic? Because I have more social justice stuff.
Let's stay on topic then.
Okay. And you know, I think this is one of those things that if you, as with any of these, I would say like, political, social, personal type of things. Like if you agree with what he's saying, you're going to tend to think he should be doing that. He should be using his bully pulpit,
right,
to be a bully about whatever. You know, if he needs to bully other business people or bully lawmakers or other companies or whatever. You know, if it's an issue that you agree with, you're probably
like, go for it. That's awesome.
And if it's something that you either don't agree with or probably I think more common is just. It might not be the big of a deal. I mean, even there's a lot of, you know, these gay people that are just like, I don't care. It's not a big deal to me. So whatever. If he wants to do that, that's fine. So you're just more kind of apathetic about it. But so notes here. His efforts to redefine pro-business as being liberal on social issues are making him a political target is what I'm noticing here. I already read that quote to you. Here's what wasn't that one of the comments was that someone else had said. Hey, Mark, when is Salesforce going to stop using Indian labor and outsourcing to countries like India with repressive laws like the southern U.S. has?
Mm.
Crickets, right? He says, you know, of course, that's what we thought. He said, oh, wait, but then you can get on your soapbox and make the nightly news. It's all good. But when it might affect your bottom line, silence. And that this is a similar argument I've seen, I believe, about LGBT issues he's made in the past. And there's been, you know, articles written in you know, major journals, magazines, whatever, that make the similar argument that some of the places that Salesforce is doing business or employing people or whatever is that they're not saying anything there, whether it's Singapore, India, various places in the Middle East where, you know, I mean, if you're gay, the penalties are severe, in some cases death.
Well, it puts Salesforce in an interesting position, I think, because then they're advocating for a certain position, a certain kind of viewpoint.
But it's like a straw man. He's going into places where he knows he can, where it's already won. It's already won.
Well,
right?
I mean, politics and
that's why some of the gay people here are like, I don't get it. It's not even a deal. So I don't care if he does it.
Let's see if I can get this out without saying anything wrong.
I'll try not to interrupt you.
Very tough to come out and say something that's somewhat intelligent that is meant to be just kind of a generalized statement without coming out and saying something wrong. There's a difference between businesses, a business as an entity and its purpose as an entity, and politics and you know, what's right as a society and as citizens and what we accept and what we don't accept.
Yeah.
They don't go together. I wish they would. And I know Benioff and others are trying to pioneer this kind of social company where that does go together, but it really can't. You're forcing two different ideologies, two different things that exist to do two different things and trying to make them do the same thing. and it's going to conflict.
Right. So if you look, if you read Salesforce's articles of incorporation that states their purpose and their bylaws, which states their purpose in the business and the things right. they're allowed to do, and when you think of their board of directors, who their shareholders have appointed to implement this, and then he's off doing, using his power and his title and his position to do what some people might argue as, and I'm not arguing this, completely separate things that right. are more either personal to him or whatever. The reason I say I'm not arguing that is because I actually think that in some ways it does help Salesforce as a company, as an entity. You can make that a good argument.
You can make that argument.
Yeah,
right.
yeah. And so I'm not, again, I mean, I think we're almost playing, I guess,
devil's advocate.
I mean, because
yeah.
it is, he is doing something that's different. I mean, there are other tech CEOs that are somewhat outspoken. Tim Cook has been somewhat, not anything like Benioff.
Right.
I mean, Tim Cook, you get the idea that he's actually busy doing his job. And on Mark, with Mark, you kind of wonder. That's, I think, maybe some of the point you're making. Like, is he doing what we are paying him to do, what he was hired to do?
Right.
And I get it. I know he created the company, but now he's a minority shareholder. I mean, he's, you know, he's got bosses. And,
right.
and they can speak. And they have before that, right?
I mean, it also leads into, I mean, he's kind of stepped up this kind of political activism. And I think it's leading credence to my theory that and many of our theories that Block is getting groomed to kind of take over, that Benioff will transition away from Salesforce. He will still be involved in the board, but I think he'll transition away to focus more on politics and charity and all those kind of things, which he seems to enjoy doing very much more than running and building Salesforce. And I don't know.
I mean, that's well, speculating, I think.
No, it's not. When we get to the video, the last...
he told you that?
the last clip of the videos that we're about to listen to, I think you might actually agree as well.
And also, don't forget, because I don't remember if we mentioned this, but there was, I think it was a Wall Street Journal, like almost like profile of Benioff a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed Colin Powell about, and they were talking to him, and one of the things they asked him about Benioff's social activism. And this is Colin Powell, and he said, advice he was giving to Mark through this article. He said, be careful. We have to mention also, Colin Powell is on the board of directors of Salesforce. He's a director, right? Be careful how far you climb up that tree, because eventually it will expose your backside. Obviously, that's a metaphor, and I don't know.
Well, I mean, Colin Powell, I mean, he rose to the height of his position as a general. I mean, it's...
Secretary of Defense.
Secretary of Defense, yeah. So, I mean, he knows navigating the politics. He knows... You don't get to that position without navigating politics.
And he's no, you know, raging right-wing wacko.
No.
Right? I mean, he's basically left. He was a Republican, I guess, but I think he's left the Republican Party. He said that they, you know, he really came out against the Republican Party. So I don't think he's some, you know, ideological
I think he's a very intelligent person. I think he knows how to navigate politics. And I think this is kind of more of his, you know what? I'm older, wiser. I've played this game. You know, it's just a cautionary words, yeah. I think.
Yeah. Do you want to, let's see. Well, the next video is different, you said, on a different topic? Because I was like, I got a couple of other quotes here.
Yeah.
So there are some, you know, like legal professors and different things that are chiming in. Let's see. Josh McCoon, sponsor of the Georgia law that Benioff's activism vetoed. This is Georgia. He called him the ringleader for CEOs who, quote, use economic threats to exercise more power over public policy than the voters who use the democratic process. So the argument there is that Benioff is usurping the democratic power of the citizens of that state by being an economic bully. The governor called what Mark's been doing is high risk, saying a great disconnect exists between the corporate suites and Main Street.
It's an interesting position.
I don't know how I feel about that one, because isn't that Salesforce's right? They're going to go into the states. I mean, companies go into states that where the laws are beneficial to them. That's why I so disagree with, like, when Boeing wanted to create a plant in wherever it was, one of the southern, less expensive states. And they basically got told, no, you can't. It's like, well, I think, I feel like, you know, companies should be able to go to wherever it makes sense for them legal-wise, as long as they're following the rules and, you know, not breaking laws and everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's, kind of to me what Benioff's doing here. If he, you know, he's like, hey, I don't like that law, and if I don't like those laws, then, and if I don't feel like they're going to be good for my employees, then maybe I won't do business there. I don't know.
I mean, it's an interesting position, but I think in terms of the democratic process, I mean, we're talking about large companies that we'll say represent the 1% of corporations. If we're going with that mindset, you know, the 1% versus the 99%, the richest 1% versus the everyone else. You know, why would the 1% have a higher voice, a more influence on our system, our society, than the 99%?
It's like super delegates.
So yeah, exactly. So it does impact us in terms of, you know, our voice as citizens, because yeah, we're not worth $3 billion.
Right.
We're not on track to do $10 billion next year. You know, we're feeding our families. We're trying to, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't see how that's an issue.
Oh, here was the Ron Burgundy quote. So this guy says he was previously called the Ron Burgundy of tech for only pretending to be progressive. Benioff is now, because he used to be a Republican. Do you know that? Benioff used to be a Republican.
He's an American.
Well, I know he's American.
Not, he's not a Democrat or Republican. He's an American. Not America.
I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I'm an American.
But this guy says...
Which was a perfect response, by the way.
He's now deliberately attracting conservative ire. Quote, the business of business isn't just about creating profits for shareholders. It's about improving the state of the world.
Well, see, that's where personal Benioff gets mixed in with Salesforce. And I think it's unfair because I think in general, he's been pretty fair about his politics.
Yeah, I just feel like so far investors haven't punished him. And if investors and customers haven't punished this, then...
But again, I mean, Benioff's personal actions should not influence Salesforce, but yet it does because of his high-profile position and his ties to the company and the way he uses the company's resources to help guide that.
Let's say that his personal beliefs happen to coincide with what's best for Salesforce. If this is good for Salesforce, if, you know, equal rights laws and all these things are good for Salesforce, then why shouldn't he be out there doing this? So what if he happens to personally agree with it?
What if he happens to personally agree that, I don't know, anyone under 18 should be shot and dead? I don't know. I'm making some wild accusation that could never be true, that I hope no one will ever take me seriously. I mean, if you take the argument of something you don't believe in, or you take that argument,
well, let's,
do you tie that in with Salesforce resources?
Okay, well, I can't even go with your example there. But if it's,
I was struggling.
If it's something that furthers the interests of Salesforce shareholders, and I'm not going to say stakeholders because I really mean shareholders, because that's legally that's where the fiduciary responsibility is to the shareholders, not the stakeholders. Check your laws. Then he should do it. Yes. Now, if the board of directors disagrees with him, they can fire him.
They can. It's a dangerous game to play, in my opinion.
It might be. I agree with you. I would be very uncomfortable if I was him. Now, he seems pretty comfortable doing this. I would be, you know, maybe I'm a big weenie.
Yeah, you are.
Thanks. But awkward silence was me waiting for you to count to re-encourage me that I'm not, John.
Well, I'm about to and say that I'm a bigger weenie than you are. I'm less likely to say something controversial. I try not to. I'm less inclined.
By the way, I just got to say, this whole topic for John and I is uncomfortable.
It is.
Because I know that it's going to piss people off. They're going to think that I think one thing when they don't really know what I think.
Right. But I mean, that's...
Or they think we're giving him a hard time when in fact he's supporting a cause that people believe in. And I'm not trying to give him a hard time because it's a certain cause or whatever. I'm just... Again, it's more from a business perspective. Like,
it is.
Does this make sense? Is this good for Salesforce?
Right.
And also, you know, is he being just a blowhard, you know, fake about this because he's actually, you know, a Republican who disagrees with us or whatever? I don't think that's the case at all.
No, I don't. I think he's genuine in his concerns and his beliefs. I don't think there's any malice or ill content around anything he's doing, but. It does expose a certain amount of risk to Salesforce because he has tied the things that he champions for directly with Salesforce, using Salesforce resources. And by that, I mean, we're not going to hold our conference in Indiana. We're going to move our employees out of Indiana. It's not Benioff saying, hey, this is wrong. Let me lay out this and you know, organize some people to kind of sign a petition. No, it's economic impact. We are moving Salesforce resources out of your state because of this. And that's a concern for me because he's tying his personal beliefs directly with the company. And again, like you said, because most of us probably agree that it either it doesn't matter or it's not that big of an issue. But what happens if it is something that becomes a big of an issue? What if it's something that isn't agreeable?
Hopefully you haven't invested, you know, millions of dollars in Apex code. That's all I got to say.
It's a distraction. It's yeah, one more thing to check off your list. Salesforce is a good company, but you know what? They do this other thing that scares me.
So now Salesforce has a CEO who is, you know, one person's corporate bully subverting the democratic process, and he's another person's social justice warrior. That's a lightning rod, man. That's very dividing, and that's the, I think, for Salesforce shareholders and customers and stakeholders. I mean, that's the question you have to ask yourself: is you know, gosh, is this good, or how does this? I mean. For my interest as a shareholder, as a customer, whatever, is this furthering Salesforce's interest? Does this put Salesforce in a better position? Or is it putting them at risk?
I think for the most part, it doesn't really matter. No one really cares.
That's how I feel too. Well, we just wasted 30 minutes.
It's a topic to explore. It's fun to kind of talk about this and explore on it and figure out, you know, is this potentially an impact for Salesforce or not? I mean, anyone who's analyzing Salesforce has to look at the bigger picture of Salesforce.
It's his fault. We just spent 30 minutes on this. It's not our fault. I mean, I'm not the one out there, you know, giving these talks.
All right. Well, let's get to the quarter number video because this next clip is about what the Q, I think I put Q2 in my notes, but it's actually Q1 numbers means for Salesforce. And it's his response to that. And then the last clip we'll get to after that.
Is this Mark Kramer?
Hi. I've made plans for later in case the state.
All right. What was your time? 720. Oh, nailed it. Wow.
Numbers you're speaking about. So, but a $2 billion quarter, first time. What does that mean for Salesforce?
Well, I think what it means is we're well on our way to go right past our $10 billion dream. You know, a lot of people weren't sure Salesforce could get to a billion.
Our $10 billion dream. Our?
It is absolutely my dream, and I'm
You stepped on my clip.
It is absolutely my dream, and I'm dedicated to being the fastest to 10 billion.
And have buildings erected and my name on hospitals all across the country. You will never forget me.
I know
that's
you
where we were when we first started talking. The first time I was on your show, now we're talking about 10 billion is imminent. And that's very exciting for Salesforce.
There's four more quarters to go.
It's not
stopping
there. You can see this is also.
And who would have ever imagined? I mean, look at any of these other companies, Microsoft, SAP, Oracle, when they hit 10 billion. Massively profitable, almost the entire way there. Not just once they got there, but the whole trip. I went back and looked at financials. This is like a year ago. Went back when they were at, you know, a $2, $3 billion company, and Salesforce said, no one's ever done this and at this level and whatever. I went back and looked, and sure enough, they were growing that fast. But they were also profitable at that point, like 30% earnings.
Hmm.
So it's not that amazing and unbelievable. I mean, when you're buying your growth like that,
right?
Accelerated revenue growth. This is a very exciting moment for Salesforce. You can see it in the core numbers that we just have a tremendous position in the market. You also know, you can look at our competitors have been dramatically weakened by not shifting aggressively to the cloud. Just look at
okay. So Oracle, who still is net profit earning billions every quarter, is dramatically weakened.
I don't know. I agree with that statement.
Who's dramatically weakened?
Well, I don't know about dramatically weakened, but you got to admit that Ellison had egg on his face with the fact that he's having to move to cloud.
Okay, so Mark hasn't. Mark says stuff all the time that ends up being stupid half the time.
This is good stuff for a CEO to say about his competitor.
I guess what I'm saying is it's factually inaccurate.
Maybe, but it's fun. Ellison had to eat crow on cloud. Come on. He did.
I guess, but Ellison
is. And now he's all about, now he's so afraid of making a mistake, he's all about Docker lightweight containers.
You know what? Ellison is printing billions of dollars a year, and I'll take that with a little bit of egg on my face.
At some point.
Any day.
At some point.
Any day.
At some point, which these guys are at that point, money doesn't matter. It's their reputation and power that they got to protect.
Well, no, money does matter, which is why Mark sells shares like the company's burning down. He does. $2 million every couple of days. Like the place is burning down.
It's on a schedule. It's not like there's
a schedule as if the place was burning down.
No, he's just got a lot of commitments. He's got some hospital. He's got committed to hospitals with his name on it and everything. He's got to generate some cash.
Okay. Well, you know what a good way to generate cash is? Have a profitable company.
Oracle, just look at SAP. You can look at the messages that they've delivered to you right on this show, but they haven't delivered their products. They haven't transformed their businesses.
He said products, not profits. Boy, that would be a different sentence, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, his context
they've delivered profits.
Yeah.
He's the one who, out of all of them, who hasn't delivered profits. I mean, just, I don't know. It strikes me as hypocritical. It's like,
I'm a bit on the defensive because I think he's selling Salesforce right now, and I think he's making great CEO statements.
Let's listen to them sell it.
And therefore, they haven't transformed their customers.
Okay,
and that's why companies like Oracle and SAP are suffering so badly.
But March 15th, Larry Ellison talks about how...
I can't handle him anymore.
No, anyway, I mean, that was a cutoff point anyways for that clip. So,
all right, we have another one.
So this one is where Cramer actually asks him straight out, you know, about all these buyout rumors, because there's more buyout rumors. There's rumors about Microsoft maybe renewing their bid, and also rumors about this whole AWS thing. You want to talk about the AWS before we do this clip?
I guess.
So it's the Amazon thing, and I read the article.
Okay.
So at first I dismissed it as some other rumor, but the author in this article made a interesting case that when you look, because he makes the case, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but that the reason AWS finally got broken out in their financials is because people were, you know, forced them to. They were really asking for these numbers, right?
Yeah.
And so when they did, it exposed the fact that AWS is really profitable.
Right.
And that it would be more profitable if it was a standalone stock.
Sure.
And so he makes this kind of tangential. I don't even know if that's even the right word to use. But he makes this line saying that the case for AWS or Amazon to own Salesforce is that AWS could technically split off into its own company. In that, it would need more than just AWS. Salesforce could be a part of that. And that Benioff would become CEO of the new AWS Salesforce company.
Yeah. Although it would immediately kill the profitability of AWS if you combine it with Salesforce. That's one reason why Microsoft didn't want to pay that much for Salesforce. It hurts their numbers too much. You're just adding all this cost and you're not no profit.
But it would be
an interesting combination, wouldn't it?
And it's interesting. I mean, when it was Microsoft taking over Salesforce, there was a lot of doom and gloom. The rumor with Amazon, people seem generally excited and agreeable to that idea, which I think is interesting.
From an investment perspective?
No, just a general community thing. Amazon and Salesforce would be awesome. Microsoft and Salesforce, it would die. They'd kill it. It would suck. They'd mishandle it. Oracle, and it'd just die in their portfolio. For some reason, Amazon seems like this brighter picture hope. If there was ever a company to buy Salesforce, that people feel more hope out of that type of acquisition.
When you're a big customer of AWS as Salesforce is, maybe it does make sense to either buy them or merge. I mean, I'm sure Salesforce writes probably $100 million to $200 million check to AWS every year for Heroku.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I've never seen those numbers.
Well, I don't have any either. I think Heroku is easily a $300 million company.
Mm. It's a good chunk of change.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So last
a couple things involving you, what you used this term is the excitement that you have. Why, if you're so excited, and every time I've ever seen you personally, professionally, on air, you're excited, why do people keep thinking that you're a seller of your company?
Well, Jim, you know, this is an incredible moment in history. And as you can see, Salesforce's growth continues to accelerate and grow. I've now been the working on this company for almost 18 years.
He almost forgot his line there. Do you notice that?
Oh, it gets better.
It does.
And I think that, you know, we've delivered fantastic results. You know, as part of that, of course, I'm also making personal decisions as that goes. That's personal what's happening decisions. There.
Well, wait a second.
Now, that was an intentional tale.
Here's where it gets better.
That you're, that sounds different.
That's off script.
It sounds exactly. Like that you conceivably...
That threw him for a loop. He literally does not know where to go on the script at this point.
Well, that's Cramer. Now listen to Benioff's response, who has this similar response.
This is a shit show,
listen,
man.
Listen.
Could be a seller.
I guess I'm not understanding what you're talking about.
No, if someone approached the company, I keep hearing, well, wait a second.
I see what you're saying.
Right, I mean, because I thought for sure, I thought we could put it to rest, Mark. That you're excited, you got the towers, you got the money, you got the $2
billion. I thought
you give
talking,
away a lot, and then we can just stop it.
Okay, he's vamping for Mark, so Mark can find his place again.
Yeah.
right now about takeovers. Stop talking about it.
So, I mean, Salesforce is such on such an exciting journey, Jim. I mean, I've never been more excited about Salesforce. I've never been more excited about where we are and what's going on. I mean, this is just an incredible time. And when I hear about all those things, I just put all that aside and I just focus on executing my job in the company, which is to be the CEO.
Good.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Let's leave it at that. Thank you. That's what I
hope that I certainly hope
that's
that
what
this
I
quarter
we talked about.
Yeah.
I certainly hope that this quarter is evidence of that, Jim.
Yeah. It sure is, Mark. Thank you so much. We're going to be back.
Wait a minute. That sounds like you will sell.
What they called 911 for Jim.
I know.
He's going to make it through that.
That video was hard to watch, too, because his voice was going in and out. He thought he was going through a second puberty. It was that bad.
Man, personal decisions. I'm going to be making some personal decisions. I mean, that is...
Well, I think it leads to Keith Block taking over. He's being groomed, and Benioff will be on
the
board,
but
he'll transition.
Yeah, you're
right. Transition.
You've been saying that.
Yeah.
And I've kind of been downplaying it, but you may be right.
I might be.
Okay. There's so many possibilities here. I mean, as far as what he wants to do, it's like, does he want to just retire and, you know, do charity and enjoy his five homes across Hawaii and California? Does he want to?
I would, man.
Does he want to combine? Does he want to buy AWS and run a combined, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about AWS consuming Microsoft, Salesforce. Maybe it'll go the other way. Right. Who knows?
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I had, I had this whole thing prepared on, from the NA14 outage, just the whole communication debacle, but we're going to have to carry it over because I'm out of time.
You want to pause and restart?
Today?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, let's say we just release it.
Okay.
That'll be yet another tease. I'm not sure how provocative it is or how interesting it is, but I know.
And to that, I say, good day, sir.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
Best single quarter I've seen from technology this year.
The best quarter from technology?
It was the best quarter of the year. Another amazing quarter.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, wait a second. That doesn't sound like that you're, that sounds different.
I guess I'm not understanding what you're talking about. It's really a transposition for a lot of governments who think about them as their citizens. Well, they're not your citizens. They're your customers.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
All right, let's leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
And as usual, I have to pee.